Okay. Page 774, Parshas Ba'al Yischa. Okay, so this parsha comes at in continuation of the last parsha. It's sort of a one parsha runs into the others, we'll soon see. And has a number of different sections. So the first part of this week's parsha is really like a standalone. It's not connected with the rest of the parsha, which deals with a whole bunch of different topics. But the first parsha deals with the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, which is a bit of out of place because it really has to do more with the time that they built the Mishkan and so on. But let's have a look at it. So let's have a look at the first paragraph. The post says, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe Lemar, and Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Daber al Aharon v'amarto Elov, speak to Aaron and tell him, V'ha'aloyscha es hanoyros, when you kindle the lamps, el mul p'nei ha-menoyra, towards the face of the menorah. What that means is that there were seven lamps and six on either side faced the inner part of the menorah. Right, so you had the middle stem and then the three on either side faced inwards. That's the meaning of el mul p'nei ha-menorah. Yairu shivas haneirais, the seven candles shall burn. Continues the pasuk, Vayas Cain Aaron did this. El mul p'nei ha-menorah, facing the menorah, ha'ela neiroseha. He kindled the lamps. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe. V'ze ma'aseh ha-menorah. Mikshazah. This is the way the menorah was made. This is the workmanship of the menorah, says the pasuk. It was one piece of gold. We know the menorah was made out of one piece of solid gold. Ad yirecha, ad pircha, from its base till its flowers and all the parts of the menorah. Mikshahi, it was one solid piece. Kamara, asheherah, Hashem es Moshe, was like the vision that Hashem had shown Moshe. Kain, osa, es ha-menorah. That's the way he made the menorah. Okay. So, first of all, let's have a look at the very first expression in the pasuk. That Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu that Aaron should kindle the menorah. But uses the expression Beha'aloyscha. Right? Now, in Hebrew, to kindle, as you would know from the bracha on Friday night, is L'hadlik. Right? That's how you normally say to kindle a candle. So it really should have said here Behadlikcha. Yet, it uses the expression Beha'aloyscha, but the word aloyscha comes to the word aliyah, which is to lift up, elevate. Right? So, we need to first of all understand just that basic expression. What does that mean that we use the expression that you will kindle the menorah, and the term is used Beha'aloyscha, which is of course the name of the parasha as well. So the various different mepharshim, Rashi says that it alludes to the fact that there was a step in front of the menorah. Not that Aaron actually needed the step necessarily, because the menorah wasn't that tall. The menorah was 18 tefachim tall. In fact, it was probably one of the shortest vessels in the Mishkan. So it was 18 tefachim, which is 6, 12. Yeah, it's 3 amos, 3 meters, which is about 1.5 meters tall. It's not so tall. But nevertheless, Aaron had to be, he had to be on top of the candle, so he had to go up on a step and kindle menorah that way. And that's hinted in the word Beha'aloyscha, which comes to the word Aliyah, which is to go up a step. So that's one pshat. The other pshat is, as Rashi also brings, that it's a description of how he should light the candles, which means when he lights the candles of the menorah, he needs to hold the whatever instrument he's using to light the candles, he needs to hold it there until the flame starts to burn on its own. And the expression used for that is Achetahe shal heves oile me'ileho, until the flame goes up on its own. Right? So the flame is burning independently and then he can remove his hand. So that was the part of the mitzvah, and that's all hinted in the word Beha'aloyscha, instead of when you kindle, but when you make the flame go up and you make the flame burn up, right? Also, it's also a spiritual description of what was actually happening when Aaron kindled the menorah. Because it's brought down in many places that the candles of the menorah, represented the various souls of the Jewish people. You know, there's a famous pasuk which says, Neir Hashem Nishmas Adam, right? The candle of God is the neshama of a person. So the neshama of a human being is considered like a candle. That's a symbol of a candle. Now, we know that in the menorah there were seven candles, right? Why were there seven candles? Because we are taught that there are seven different types of people. Each person serves Hashem in their own unique way. And the seven candles correspond to the seven midas, the seven emotions. So like, for example, some people, the way they serve Hashem is primarily driven by love. So that's chesed. Others by fear, which is gevura, etc. So everyone is sort of motivated a different way. Everyone is inspired a different way. Everyone has their own sort of specific, unique personality. Now, Aaron's job was to elevate the Jewish people. Because, I think I might have mentioned this before, the Zohar says that Moshe and Aaron were like the unterfuhrers, like the people who walk the chasna kala to the chuppah by Matan Torah, right? I think I mentioned this last time we had Parshat Midbar. Because Matan Torah was a marriage between the Jewish people and Hashem, and Moshe and Aaron were like the unterfuhrers, and it says that Moshe Rabbeinu, he was the unterfuhrer of Hashem, so to speak, and Aaron was the unterfuhrer of the Jewish people. What that means is, in order for there to be a relationship between us and Hashem, in order for there to be a marriage between us and Hashem, two things are necessary to happen. Two things need to happen. One thing needs to happen is that Hashem has to come closer to us, meaning he has to be willing, so to speak, to descend and have a relationship with us, which is hinted in the concept of Vayered Hashem al Harsinai. Hashem came down on Harsinai. But we need to meet him halfway. In other words, we need to elevate ourselves and become higher, and become more refined, so that we are ready to meet Hashem, so to speak, right? So the process of the marriage between Hashem and the Jewish people is that Hashem is willing to come down a bit and we're willing to elevate ourselves a bit, right? Which is also the whole symbolism of Matan Torah, that we had a mountain. The mountain symbolizes us going up. Matan Torah wasn't a flat place, it wasn't a mountain. But it says, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, Hashem came down on Har Sinai because it's a symbol of Hashem coming down to us. So it's brought down as following, that the two people responsible, so to speak, for making this happen is Moshe and Aaron. Moshe is the one who, so to speak, brings Hashem down to us. Right? And Aaron is the one that helps the people, the Jewish people, elevate themselves towards Hashem. Right? So therefore, Moshe, that's why it says Moshe is the unterfuhrer of the chassan, and Aaron is under fear of the Jewish people. So Aaron's job, so to speak, was to help the people elevate themselves. And that's hinted in the whole mitzvah of the menorah, that Aaron kindles the menorah. Kindles the menorah means he elevates the neshamas, he elevates the soul. That's why he kindles the menorah of seven branches, because it's seven different types of neshamas. And that's why the term beha'aloscha, beha'aloscha comes from the word aliyah, to lift up. Because when Aaron kindled the menorah, it wasn't just a simple ritual of kindling the menorah, it was a process of elevating the neshamas, of elevating the souls. Okay, so that's the term of Be'halos. Okay. But there's a much broader thing that needs to be understood in this whole section of the parasha, and that is like this. That is totally out of place. Right? There's two parts in this paragraph. One is the mitzvah of Aaron kindling the menorah, and one is the way the menorah was made, right? That second part of the paragraph. This is where the menorah was made. It was one piece of gold, etc. Now that second part is totally out of place. Like, why? I mean, Sefer Bamidbar does talk a little bit about the things that the Levim, the tribe of Levi, used to do, and Aaron is part of that tribe. So maybe the kindling of the menorah is not totally out of place, but the making of the menorah is totally out of place. I mean, we have the design of the vessels of the Mishkan back in Parshas Truma and Tzaveh Vayakol Pekudei. What's it doing here? Why did the Torah find necessary to tell us again of how the menorah was made? Right? But even the first part is a bit out of place. What's the first part? Why do we all of a sudden have the mitzvah of the menorah here? What's that got to do with it? So, There's a famous concept here, which I want to share with you, but then take it a bit deeper. Famous concept is that this parsha comes directly after the parsha before. If you have a look at the parsha before, right, which we'll look at in a minute, but the parsha before is like this. The end of Parshas Nasa talks about the day that the Mishkan was dedicated. Right? Talks about the day that the Mishkan was inaugurated. Now we know what happened was that when the Mishkan was built and erected on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, there was what we call the Chanukas HaMizbech, the dedication of the Mizbech. When we had dedication of the Mizbech, so the Nisim, the leaders of the tribes, the leaders of the various Shvatim, volunteered to bring special korbanos, special sacrifices to dedicate the Mizbech. They approached Moshe Rabbeinu, 12 of them, all 12 Nisim, and they had these korbanos, these sacrifices they wanted to bring to dedicate the Mizbech. And, as I mentioned on Shabbos, Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't sure if he should accept it or not because it wasn't really divinely instructed, it wasn't a command from Hashem to do it, but he consulted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem said, yes, it's a very appropriate thing, they should be the ones to dedicate the Mizbech, and they had the Korbanos of the Nisim. So what happened was, for the first 12 days of Nisan, right, each day a different leader of a tribe brought his set of sacrifices. They were actually identical, but they were so special that the Torah actually chooses to repeat them every single day. Okay. Right after that, we have the mitzvah that is given to Aaron to kindle the menorah. Right? In this week's parasha. So we end off with all the korbanos, all the sacrifices that the Nesim brought to dedicate the Mizbeach. At the end of Parshas Nosai, the Torah sums it up and gives like a total of what was brought, and then goes into our parsha, which is the mitzvah kindle menorah. So says Rashi, let's have a look at the first Rashi. Famous Rashi. Lomo nismucha parshas ha-menorah le-parshas ha-Nesim, says Rashi. Why is the parsha of the menorah put right next to the parsha of the leaders bringing the korbanos to dedicate the mizbeach? Says Rashi, lefi kishara Aaron Chanukas HaNesim, because when Aaron saw the dedication of the Nesim, of the leaders of the tribes, the beautiful way in which they had inaugurated the mizbeach, chol shodaita, he sort of felt faint. He felt bad. He actually didn't participate. He didn't participate in dedication of Mizbeach. Not him and not his tribe. Shevet Levi wasn't part of it. So even though Aaron was a leader, he was a greater leader than the Nesim actually, but he didn't participate, because if you have a look at the Parsha, it was 12 tribes, including Manasseh and Ephraim, which means 12 without the tribe of Levi. So the tribe of Levi didn't actually participate in the dedication of the Mizbeach, nor did Aaron himself. So Aaron felt bad. Right. So Omar Loi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Hashem said to Aaron, Chayecha, I promise you, that Shalcha Gedoyla Mishalohem, that your contribution, your participation in the whole Mishkan is greater than theirs. Why? She'ato Madlik Umeiti V'Saneiros. Because you will kindle and clean out the candles. You'll have the mitzvah of kindling the menorah and cleaning the menorah, and that's your participation, that's your contribution. That's what Rashi says. And that's why this parasha comes here about the menorah right after the Chanukah Sanasim. So we have a famous Ramban, a very, very famous Ramban. That Ramban says he doesn't understand what Rashi is saying. What kind of comfort, what consolation is it to Aaron that he will kindle the menorah? First of all, why? Why the menorah? Aaron, the Kohanim, had many contributions to the Beis HaMikdash. They brought korbanos every single day. They brought incense every single day. Aaron himself went once a year into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, into the Holy of Holies. Right? So, why didn't Hashem comfort him with something else? In other words, if it is true that Aaron didn't need to be part of the dedication of Mizbeach because he will contribute, he will participate in the very service of the Beis HaMikdash, then there are many other things Aaron did. Why the menorah? Right? That's what the Ramban asks. So to answer that, the Ramban actually brings another medrash, another chazal, which puts it a little bit differently. That the way Hashem comforted Aaron was to say the following, that you are worried that you didn't participate in the dedication of the Mizbeach that the Nesim, the leaders of the tribes, brought, you need to understand, says Hashem, that their participation is very finite. What they are doing is comes to an end. What you are doing doesn't come to an end. Says Ramban, that's also very difficult to understand. What do you mean? The Korbanos don't last forever. The Korbanos don't last forever, that's true. But nor does the Menorah. The Menorah doesn't last forever. So just like the Korbanos that were brought by the Nesim ultimately stopped, and the Beis HaMikdash was ultimately destroyed, so was the Menorah. The Menorah didn't last forever. Aaron kindled the Menorah as long as there was a Mishkan. The mitzvah of kindling a Menorah continued as long as there was a Beis HaMikdash. And that's it. Right. Says the Ramban that the one thing answers the other. That the reason that Hashem comforted Aaron, particularly with the mitzvah of the Menorah, was to allude to the Chanukah licht. So it's got to do with Chanukah. That the one avodah, the one ritual, the one mitzvah of the Beis HaMikdash that would continue forever would be the mitzvah of Menorah. Because when the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed after the second Beis HaMikdash, and you had, that was after the mitzvah, after the story of Chanukah, and as a result, the Chachamim were Mesakim, the Chachamim instituted the mitzvah of Chanukah licht. The Chanukah licht, the Chanukah candles have the same Kedusha as the menorah in the Beis HaMikdash. Many Mepharshim talk about this on Chanukah, that the Chanukah candles are draw down the same holiness, the same Kedusha as the candles in the Beis HaMikdash. And that answers this whole concept of here, why this comes here, and what kind of consolation this was for Aaron. That Hashem said to Aaron, you are worried about not participating in the dedication of Mizbeach. The dedication of Mizbeach was done through korbanos, was done through sacrifices. Sacrifices are finite. There will be a time, a huge chunk in Jewish history, that sacrifices will not take place. It won't be korbanos. But your shalcha, your contribution, in other words, your mitzvah that I'm giving you, that I'm emphasizing here, which is the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, is eternal. How, says the Ramban? Through the mitzvahs of Chanukah, through the candles of Chanukah. That's just a symbol. That's not a mitzvah in the Torah. You don't have to have an etamid. That's not. It's not a halacha. It's a minhag that it comes from the menorah also. It's the idea of ner tamid, because the menorah was called a ner tamid, even though it was lit at night, and it lasted throughout the night. But one of the miracles of the Beis HaMikdash was that one of the candles, called the ner ma'aravi, the western candle, which is a whole dispute in itself, exactly which candle that's referring to, actually continued to burn. Every day. It was a miracle every day in the Beis HaMikdash. That although they all had the same amount of oil and the same thickness of wick, so there was enough for them to burn throughout the night. There was enough oil and wicks in the menorah to burn through the winter nights, it says, the nights of Tevis, right, the longest nights. And at the end of that period of time would come to an end, there was one candle that would just continue on. So there was the idea of a Ner Tamid, there was always a candle burning in the Beis HaMikdash. And because of that, we have this idea that since the shul is a Mikdash Ma'at, it's a mini Beis HaMikdash, so we have an idea of Ner Tamid, there should always be a candle burning, and that's why many shuls have that concept of having a candle that's a bulb or something that's always burning. Okay, so that's the explanation of why the mitzvah menorah comes here. But what it doesn't answer is why the design of the menorah comes here. In other words, it's two separate concepts. One is a mitzvah to kindle the menorah. We understand that was Aaron's mitzvah. But then there's another thing. The next pasuk talks about the design of the menorah. It's a design that we already know from before. We know it from Parshas Truma. And it seems to be repeated here completely out of place, and it's not necessary for this idea. But this idea is just to tell us that, Aaron had a mitzvah of kindling the menorah, and that was his contribution, and that was his consolation, that he would have an eternal mitzvah. But that's not dependent on how the menorah was designed. Right? So why do we need to know, as well as the mitzvah of kindling the menorah, why do we need to know as well that the design of the menorah was made out of one piece of solid gold and that it was a very beautiful, intricate design? Why is that necessary over here? Okay. So I saw a very interesting explanation in a sefer called Oznaim LaTorah. Oznaim LaTorah is from a rabbi called Rabbi Sorotskin, who lived pre-war. I think he lived in Lithuania or somewhere in Europe. And he wrote a very good commentary on Chumash and comes up with some very interesting, innovative ideas sometimes. If you have a look at the end of last week's parsha, okay, where the Torah summarizes all the nesim, all the korbanos, all the sacrifices that the leaders of the tribes brought to dedicate the Mizbeach, and then goes right away to the midst of the menorah. It actually doesn't go right away to the midst of the menorah. There's actually one pasuk that interrupts. If you have a look. Right? Have a look at the last pasuk of last week's parasha. Okay, this is right, the last pasuk is on end of page 772. So the last words of the second to last pasuk says, Zois Chanukas HaMizbeach Acharei Yimashach Oseh. Torah summarizes and says, this was the dedication of the Mizbeach, this is how it all worked. And then all of a sudden we learn, Uvevoi Moshe El Oil Moed, when Moshe Rabbeinu would come to the Oil Moed, would come to the Mishkan, Ledaber Itoi, to speak with Hashem. There's a pasuk that just flies in here, completely out of context, describing of how Hashem communicated with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Says the pasuk, Vayishma Sakol, Moshe Rabbeinu would come to the Mishkan, he would hear the voice, Medaber Elov, talking to him, Ma'ala Kapoiris, was talking to him from the top of the Aron, that's Hashem communicated with Moshe Rabbeinu, the voice of Hashem would come forth from the top of the Aron, right? Asher Al Arona, it is in Vayishna Kruvim, between the two Kruvim, Vayidaber Elov, and he would speak to him. And then right away to the midst of the menorah. So it's interesting that we always say that the Torah finishes with the korbanos, the sacrifices of a dedication of the Mizbeach given by the leaders of the tribe, given by the Nesim, and goes right away into the Chanukah, into the midst of kindling the menorah, which was Aaron's contribution, right? But in fact, it's not quite like that, because there's one pasuk that's in the middle. So it goes the korbanos of the Nesim, Moshe Rabbeinu's communication with Hashem, and then the midst of kindling the menorah, right? Which is not what we normally say. So he brings a medrash and a gemara that says that it's all part of the same equation, because there's a gemara that Moshe Rabbeinu also felt very left out of the dedication of Mizbeach. It wasn't only Aaron. It was Moshe Rabbeinu as well. Moshe and Aaron, at the end of the day, were the two ultimate leaders of the Jewish people. And yet the dedication of the Mizbeach and the whole celebration got left to the middle management, right? To the leaders of the tribes. The Shvatim. So it wasn't just that Shevet Levi was left out. There was two very significant leaders that were left out. Moshe and Aaron. Aaron and Moshe. So there's a medrash that says, or Gemara even, that says, that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't need to worry about your participation in the Mishkan. What is most precious to me is your dibur, your speech, your communication you have with me. The fact that you come to the Mishkan and you communicate in a clear and absolute way, absolute clear manner with Hashem, that in itself is unbelievable. The Medrash says, your speech is more precious to me than everything. Right? Which is why you have this pasuk. That's all one continuation. You have the Korbanos of the Nesim. You have Moshe Rabbeinu's consolation. Moshe Rabbeinu feeling left out. And Hashem is saying, hold on a second, the fact that you communicate with me is good. And that's the pasuk that says, Moshe Rabbeinu would come to the oil mode to communicate with Hashem. And then you have the midst of the menorah, which is Aaron's consolation. But his participation was kindling the menorah. Based on that concept, the Zman HaTorah goes further and he says the following. And he develops quite an innovative idea. It says like this. The Gemara in Tainis says that the Jewish people had three leaders: Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Okay. If that's the case, so we need to understand, where's Miriam in this whole equation? Because right? we know from other places, we know that, for example, the Yidden had three needs taken care of in the Midbar, right? The water, the food, and the clouds of glory to protect them. So we know the water came in the schus of Miriam, the clouds came in the schus of Aaron, the mon came in the schus of Moshe, right? Three, called the Gimel Roy, the three shepherds they're called. Three people who looked after Bnei Yisrael. Aaron, Miriam, and Moshe. Yeah. So now we have a question. That's the case. Where's Miriam in the soul equation? We have Moshe Rabbeinu. The Nesim brought the korbanos. They dedicated the Mizbeach. Then we have the three leaders. Moshe Rabbeinu talks to Hashem. That's his thing. Communication with Hashem. That's the pasuk of Avoy Oil Moed. Aaron kindles the menorah, that's his consolation, that's an eternal mitzvah, that lasts even after the Beis HaMikdash. But where's Miriam? So he says that Miriam is like this. If you look way early in the Chumash, Miriam is often represented by one of her descendants. Why is that? Because we find by the war of Amalek in Parshas B'Shalach, yeah? In Parshas B'Shalach, when Amalek attacks the Jewish people, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on the mountain to daven for the Eden people. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, pick an army, send them off, let them fight each tribe. In the meantime, Moshe Rabbeinu himself goes up on the mountain and he's davening, right? We have a famous idea, picks up his hands, and because he picks up his hands, so the Eden are able to remind themselves they have to daven to Hashem, and as a result of that, they win the war. So who goes out? Who goes on top of the mountain? So Moshe Rabbeinu was one to pick up his hands, but who went with him? So it says Aaron, Moshe, and Hur. That's what it says in Parshat B'Shalach. Aaron, Moshe, and Hur went on top of the mountain. Who was Hur? Hur was Miriam's son. Correct? Miriam herself didn't go out. Miriam herself says those nine didn't want to go out. She didn't think it was in the spirit of tznius and modesty to go out herself and be in the public eye in front of the whole Jewish nation. So instead, who went? Hur. So they, in other words, Aaron, Moshe, and Hur was a representation of the three leaders of Klal Yisrael. Moshe and Aaron, and then Hur representing Miriam. Okay, that's what the Zion Torah says. Now what happened to Hur? Hur was killed. You know that. Yeah, you familiar with it? No? Okay, so Hur was killed. When was Hur killed? Hur was killed by the Jewish people, by the Meister of the Egel Azov. When the Yidden came, when the Yidden were upset that Moshe, because this story with Amalek happened before Matan Torah. Right? On the way to Har Sinai, they were attacked by Amalek. Then came Matan Torah. Then the day after Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu goes up on the mountain. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down on the 17th of Tammuz. He was a day late, according to their calculation, and they're desperate to substitute him as a leader, so they want to build an Egel Azov, the golden calf. It says the Medrash and the Gemara, they actually approached Hur first. And Hur tried to stop them, so they killed Hur. Hur was young at the time. Right? In fact, that's hinted in the pasuk because it says the next day when they got up in the morning and they served the golden calf, it says, Vayokumu Litzachik. They got up to play. Litzachik means to play. And we find in Chumash that Litzachik is a terminology used for the three cardinal sins. Sometimes Litzachik means Avodah Zarah, idol worship. Sometimes Litzachik means immoral behavior. And also we know Litzachik also means murder. Right? Rashi brings over there. And they were guilty of all three. They served the golden calf, they acted immorally, and they murdered because they murdered Chur. Yeah? Okay, so Hur now is out of the picture because he was murdered. Comes time to build the Mishkan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give a special nevuah, a special prophecy to someone that comes from Miriam once again, so the Miriam could be represented in the Mishkan. Who does he give it to? He wanted to give it to Hur, but Hur is murdered. So Hur had a son called Uri, but Uri was in Avelus. Uri was in mourning. Says an amateur. The whole year he was in mourning after his father. And we have a principle that the Shekhinah, the divine presence, does not rest upon someone who's in mourning because you need simcha, you need joy to connect to the divine presence. The person who was going to be the architect of the Mishkan needed to be someone that the Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of Hashem, could constantly rest upon it. So who did it fall upon? It fall upon the architect of the Mishkan, Bezalel, who was... Bezalel was the architect of the Mishkan. Bezalel, Ben Uri, Ben Hur Lamata Yehuda. Right, that's what the Torah says. When the Mishkan was built, Hashem said to go and speak to Bezalel, and the Torah emphasizes who is Bezalel? Ben Uri, Ben Hur. He was the son of Uri, the son of Hur. Why did the Torah need to go back to his grandfather? Because he was a substitute for Hur, because Hur was the representation of Miriam. Right? So Bezalel led the project of designing an architect in the Mishkan. And he had special Ruach Hashem. He was an amazing, talented person. And he had the Ruach Hashem upon him, and he was able to do that. What was the most difficult design of the whole Beis HaMikdash? The menorah. because the menorah was an incredibly intricate piece of work with balls and flowers and all kinds of things, and yet it had to be designed from one solid piece of gold. It had to be carved out from one solid piece of gold. Now we know that the Torah over here, in the Torah in Parashat Truma, says that it was miksha, it was one piece of gold, but the word miksha also comes to the word kosher, difficult. And there's a medrash, a few medrashim, where we find that Moshe Rabbeinu found the design of the menorah incredibly hard to grasp. One place says that Hashem sort of showed him an image of fire, and what it would look like. And there's one medrash where it says that Moshe Rabbeinu kept on consulting Hashem about the design of the menorah, and Hashem kept on explaining to him, and he kept on forgetting it. Until Hashem said to him, don't worry about it, go and ask Bezalel. And ask Bezalel, says the Medrash, he asked Bezalel, he knew, he was able to design the menorah. He had the Ruach Hashem upon him, it's okay, and he was able to design the menorah with relative ease, because he had that schus, was given to him, to design the menorah. Right? So therefore, the whole Mishkan, but specifically the menorah, had an incredible emphasized connection to who? To Bezalel. What was Bezalel's chelik in the sorry, finished. What was Bezalel's participation in the Mishkan? The fact that he was Ben Uri Ben Hur. Why? All because of Miriam. So there's a nine of Torah. Now we understand the whole business. It goes like this. Last parsha we have the Nesim, the leaders of the tribes who bring the Korbanos. They were the leaders, they dedicate the Mizbeach. There are three leaders left out, not one. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. Moshe has the Pasuk, the last Pasuk of last week's parasha, that he communicates with Hashem, that's his contribution, that's his consolation. Followed immediately by Aaron's Pasuk, which is to kindle the menorah, the eternal mitzvah that was given to him. Followed by Miriam's Pasuk. Miriam's Pasuk is the design of the menorah. And that's why the Torah right after that says, "V'zeh ma'aseh menorah." This is where the menorah was made. Mikshazor, one piece of solid gold. That's Bezalel. Bezalel is instead of Miriam. Instead of Hur is instead of Miriam. So now we understand the whole continuation of Pesukim, that it's this interruption of these three concepts. Before we go back to what the Levim had to do, which is the theme of parshas, of these parshas, we have Moshe Rabbeinu's contribution, Aaron's, and Miriam's, and that's the. That accounts for all of the out of context details that come in this week's parasha. A very, very innovative thought. Okay. Before we go on, let's have a look at another pasuk that's also still in this paragraph. Because before the menorah, before the Torah goes to the menorah, while still talking about kindling the menorah. But in Pasuk Gimel, in the third Pasuk, there's an interesting Pasuk. It says, Vayas Kain Aaron. And Aaron did as he was told. Al-Mulpanei HaMenorah, facing the menorah, Hela Neresel, he kindled the lights, Kasher Tziva Hashem's Moshe, as Hashem had commanded Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? So what does it mean, Vayas Kain, he did this? So Rashi says a very strange thing. Rashi says, Vayas Kain Aaron, Aaron did this. Lahagid Shvachoi. It's coming to tell the praise of Aaron. What's the praise of Aaron? Shaloshino. He did not deviate. He didn't change from what Hashem told him to do. The way Hashem told him to do the mitzvah, that's what he did. I think I might have mentioned this word before, but the Mefarshim will ask the question, well, what kind of business is this? What kind of praise is this for Aaron? That he did what he was told? I mean, obviously, he was a frum Jew. He was given a mitzvah and he did it. What's the praise? What's the amazement that he didn't change what he was told to do? He didn't deviate from the halacha? I mean, Aaron was a tzaddik. He gets a din in Shulchan Aruch and he does it. What's the big deal? So I think it was the Kotzke that said, the pshat is like this. What does it mean, Shulchan, he didn't change? It means he didn't change from his excitement. He was consistent. The Kotzke explains like this, that very often what happens is, when we have a new mitzvah, we're very excited about it. We're very passionate about it. Yidden are very excited the first time we eat matzah on Pesach. First time we shake lulav. First time we do a mitzvah, right? I mean, not excited to eat the matzah, I'm saying. We're excited about the mitzvah. Right? Right? First time the mitzvah boy puts on tefillin, it's a big excitement. Right? First time we do a mitzvah, make shecheyada, even halachas gives us that, acknowledges that emotion. The fact that we say shecheyada. But as we start doing a mitzvah every day, we kind of lose that, you know. You know, every day we wash before we eat bread. No one's so unbelievably passionate about it. We don't make nigunim and a mitzvah, and a sunnah's mitzvah, and a l'chaim. Every time we wash for bread, right? Because, you know, we do it every day, so we lose that. We lose that thing. Special things are given special attention. So the Torah says over here, Vayas Ken Aaron did this constantly. In other words, says Rashi, the praise of Aaron was Shinoi, never changed that passion. As excited as he was, the very first time he kindled the menorah to do Hashem's mitzvah, that brand, that enthusiasm was absolutely constant. At the end of his life, when he was kindling the menorah for the thousandth time or whatever, he did it exactly the same way as the first day. It was completely consistent. And that's what it means. Not that he didn't deviate from the halacha. Obviously he did the halacha. It means he didn't deviate from the freshness and the newness that he was given, right? So there's a word, I think it might be from the Chavetz Chaim, I don't know who it's from. But it's, you know, in Elul we say, David Hashem Oiri. So there's a pasuk in Tehillim over there, in chapter 27, where David HaMelech says to Hashem like this. He says, Achas sha'alti me'es Hashem, there's one request I have from Hashem. Oysa avakesh, and that's the request I'm going to continue to ask. What's the request? Says David HaMelech, Shifti beveis Hashem kol yemei, I want to dwell in the house of Hashem all days of my life. And then the apostle says, "Ula vakir behichole," and to one translation is to visit his sanctuary. Right? So the question is, it's a contradiction in the pasuk. David HaMelech wants to live in Hashem's house all his life, and then it says, "Ula vakir," wants to visit. Are you going to live there or are you going to visit? Well, make up your mind. Right? But the pshat's the same pshat like we said over here. That a visitor is someone, it's very exciting. A person makes a big tour, you know. Person comes, stay with you the first week, you give them red carpet treatment. Run after it, right? Guy moves in for 6 months, after a while you don't look at him anymore. Comes, goes, does the other thing. Says, David HaMelech, I have one request. Shifti beis Hashem, kol yemei, I want to live in the house of Hashem all my life. I want to be always in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Beis HaMedrash, I want to always be in the house of Hashem. But I never want it to wear off, the excitement. I want it to always be like a visitor. I want it to always be like it's the first time I come. I've just come, right? Which fits very nicely into a story, and I'm sure I'll repeat it somewhere, but not anyway. Also, it's a Kotzke Rebbe story, a very, very beautiful story. Kotzke was known for his sharpness and his wittiness. So there's a story of a guy that once traveled to Kotzk. Now, the Kotzke Hasidim were renowned for their, should we say, their alternative ways of serving Hashem. They weren't always mainstream and always like everyone else. They did strange things sometimes. So one guy decided to travel to Kotzk, and he wants to observe the Kotzke Chassidim over time to see what their operations are like. Well, how they work, how they serve Hashem. Anyway, so he was there Pesach time. So the first night Pesach, he goes to shul, and after shul, the Gabba, the Shamus, gets up and he gives a clap on the bim and he makes an announcement. He says, "Mizulgein yet essen vetchera. We should go now eat dinner. Go and eat dinner now, you know." At night, you go eat dinner. This guy was horrified. That's what you call a Seder. Everyone knows. Every night we eat dinner, but Seder is called a Seder. We don't eat dinner. We have a Seder. So he was horrified that he described the Seder as dinner, another dinner. Right. Okay, anyway, but he forgot about it over time, and he was there in Kotz for a number of months, and it came Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, just before Kol Nidre, the same Shabbos gets up, and he gives a clap on the bimah, and he says, "Nigei Davin and Ma'ariv." It's going to be Davin Ma'ariv now. So again, he can understand. He says, "That's not the way you call Yom Kippur night. Ma'ariv is what you daven every night. Kippur is called Kol Nidre. It's not an ordinary Ma'ariv, it's a special Ma'ariv." So he's very disturbed. So he decided he's going to go into the Kotzke Rebbe himself and he's going to ask him, "What kind of business is this?" So he went into the Kotzke Rebbe and he said, "You know, I've been here for a while and just a lot of things bother me, but this is one thing that's really in my mind. How come Pesach, you talk about going to eat dinner, and then Kippur, you talk about going to Ma'ariv? What kind of business is this?" The Kotzke looks at me and says, "Young man," he says, "my son, I want you to know like this. He says, over here in Kotzk, every dinner is a Seder, and every Ma'ariv is a Kol Nidre." That's the sweet one. What's the difference? One Ma'ariv, Kol Nidre. Every Ma'ariv is a Kol Nidre. Every dinner is a Seder. So that's the same idea. Vayaske and Ara. Every mitzvah is special. Doesn't matter if you've done it 100 times, what's the difference? Every time we have a Ma'ariv, every time we wash for bread, every time we do a mitzvah, it's a special experience, special event. So that's the pshat of Vayaske and Ara. Okay. Let's have a look at one other thing in the parasha. The next part of the parasha we'll skip out, but it talks about the the induction of the Levim, of the how they served in the Mishkan, etc., how that had to happen. Okay, let's have a look over here. Shlishi, we'll have a look at Perek Tes, page 778. Perek Tes, chapter 9. This is the parsha of Pesach Sheni. Right? But how does it get into Pesach Sheni? So it starts off like this. Vayedaber Hashem u'Moshe, and Hashem spoke to Moshe b'midbar Sinai, in the desert of Sinai, b'shona ha-shenis. The second year, let's say some Eretz Mitzrayim, after they came out of Mitzrayim, b'chodesh ha-rishon, the first month, saying, v'yasu b'nei Yisrael ha-sapasach ha-mayadei, and he says that the Yidden should bring the Korban Pesach. What was this all about? The Yidden left Mitzrayim on the 15th of Nisan. Right, we've gone through this timeline a number of times. So they had Matan Torah, the Egel Azov, Yom Kippur, Hashem forgave them. They built the Mishkan. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the Mishkan was up. So Hashem speaks to now that Moshe Rabbeinu in the month of Nisan, and says, "Okay, now that the Mishkan's up, it's approaching the first Pesach, which will be the first anniversary of Yitzias Mitzrayim, the first Pesach the Jews are going to celebrate in the Midbar." And the Yidden shouldn't forget to bring the Korban Pesach. There's a mitzvah to bring Korban Pesach and Erev Pesach, right? It says the next pasuk, Barbos, so Yoim, the 14th day, B'chodesh Azeh, this month, Ben Abayim in the afternoon, Tasa Oysel Moedah, it should be done in its right time. G'chol Chukosav, all its laws, G'chol Mishpatav, all its halachas, Tasa Oysel, you should do it. And by Dabar Moishel B'nei Yisrael, last day is a pasach, and the Yidden spoke, and Moishel B'nei spoke to the Jews about the Pesach, and they did it. And then you have the whole story that there were some of them who couldn't bring it because they were not pure, they were tomei, and they approached Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, "Lama nigora, why should we be left out?" And Hashem and Moshe Rabbeinu consulted Hashem, and we have the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni to bring a second Pesach in case you couldn't bring the first Pesach. Okay, so that's a fairly straightforward concept. However, what often goes unnoticed is how unbelievably out of order this whole thing is. When does Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu? He speaks to him in the Midbar Sinai, the second year of going out of Egypt, in the first month. Right? Have a look at the very, very beginning of Parsh Sefer Bamidbar. On page 726. We have the mitzvah of taking a census. Right, it says Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe, page 726. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe, and Hashem spoke to Moshe. The Midbar Sinai, same place, Midbar Sinai, but oil Moed next to the Mishkan. The Echel Achodesh Hasheni, in the first of the second month, in the first of Iyar. It says something as we saw when the Jews went out of Mitzrayim, Lema saying. So up to now, we have the mitzvah that began Rosh Chodesh Iyar. So it starts with the Shchedesh Iyar. Middle of Parshas Nosa gets back to the Shchedesh Nisan, because that's when they dedicated the Mishkan. And now also in Shchedesh Nisan. So why is it totally out of order like this? So of course we know there's a principle, a mugdum of u'ukhar ba'Torah. There's no order to the Torah. There's no chronological order to the Torah. The Torah can be out of order. It's not a problem. But there has to be some reason. It just can be stum out of order. Okay, I mean that in itself is a dispute. I understand that. But normally there's some significance by the out of order, right? So Rashi, in other words, really, chronologically, Sefer Bamidbar, the book of Bamidbar, should have begun with this parsha. Right? We built the Mishkan, we dedicated the Mishkan, should have started with this parsha. Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, it's coming Pesach, don't forget to bring the Korban Pesach. Says Rashi, that Hashem did not start with this parsha, because this parsha was an embarrassment to the Jewish people. Why? Because this was the first Pesach that came out of Mitzrayim. They brought the Korban Pesach, but it was the only Korban Pesach that they brought the entire 40 years in the desert. The next 39 or 38 years, they didn't bring the Korban Pesach. Right? Don't know if you aware of this.
No.
Okay. Mitzvah to bring a Korban Pesach every Erev Pesach. The Yidden didn't bring the Korban Pesach for the next 38 years. Probably, but they didn't bring the Korban Pesach. Oh.
So why is a good question? Why is a good question? So they didn't, bottom line. And they only brought this Korban Pesach. So therefore, the Torah didn't want to begin the whole new Sefer about Midbar. It's something that is in fact an embarrassing fact for the Jewish people. Okay? Now the question is, why didn't they bring the Korban Pesach? Tosfos, right, these are the grandchildren of Rashi, the commentary on the Gemara, actually says that they weren't obligated to bring the Korban Pesach. Because Tosfos maintains that the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is a mitzvah that was specifically only for the land of Israel, for Eretz Israel, with the exception of two Korban Pesachs, the one they brought in Egypt, and the first one they were told to bring in the Midbar the first year they had a Mishkan. And that was it. In other words, this Korban Pesach that the Torah is talking about here was an exception to the rule, not the rule. So it was a specific command that this year I want you to bring the Korban Pesach. But not after that, because you're not in Eretz Yisrael. If you're not in Eretz Yisrael, you don't bring a Korban Pesach. Yeah. And that's why they didn't bring the Korban Pesach for 39 years. Problem, of course, that is, so what's the embarrassment then? If they weren't obligated in the Korban Pesach, they weren't obligated. What's the embarrassment? Says Tosfos, the embarrassment is that they got stuck in the Midbar for 40 years. That's the embarrassment. Because later on, they sinned with the Meraglim. Had they not sinned with the spies, they would have landed up in Eretz Yisrael, and they would have been able to bring the Korban Pesach the next year. So they would have been in Eretz Yisrael. They didn't. They got stuck in the Midbar for 39 years. So it's true that being stuck in the Midbar meant that they weren't able to bring a Korban Pesach. But the fact that they weren't able to bring a Korban Pesach just was highlighting the fact that they were stuck there as a punishment. And that in itself was the embarrassment. Therefore, the Torah didn't want to begin the Midbar with the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, because the mitzvah of Korban Pesach is a painful reminder that you only brought it once, because you couldn't bring it the other time because you weren't obligated to do that. And that in itself is an embarrassing thing. And therefore, the Torah didn't begin the Midbar. That's one pshat. Another pshat is the Bar Tanura. The Bar Tanura says that there was a different reason, that they actually were obligated in the whole time in the Midbar. But they couldn't, because there was another embarrassing fact, and that was that the Yidden, the whole time they were in the desert, did not circumcise themselves. They didn't have Bris Milah. They didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Bris Milah. No. So what happened was like this. After Avraham Avinu had Bris Milah, then Yitzchak, then when the Yidden were in Mitzrayim, they stopped having Bris Milah. Right? And that's why we find that there was a mass Bris Milah that happened just before they brought the Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim. Right? Then we read in Tanakh that when Yehoshua took the Jewish people in the land of Israel after 40 years in the desert, right, it says that he circumcised the Jewish nation Shenis a second time. Why Shenis? Why a second time? Because the first time was when they had Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim. The second time was when they went into the Midbar. Why didn't they circumcise themselves in the Midbar? So it had something, it was health related on some level, because they traveled a lot and there was some wind that didn't blow, the Gemara says. Something about when they were in the desert, the north wind didn't blow or something like that. Apparently that's very detrimental for someone who has Bris Milah. So therefore the bottom line is they didn't have Bris Milah. And halacha is that once you start having babies without Bris Milah, you actually can't bring a Korban Pesach. You're excluded from the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. Right? And therefore they weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach the whole time they were in the Midbar. But that's also an embarrassing idea. That embarrassing thing, they didn't have Bris Milah for 40 years, is an embarrassing fact. And therefore the Torah didn't want to begin the parsha with this. Honestly. But also, then there's another pshat of what the embarrassment was. And the embarrassment is like this. Because if you look a little bit further in this very paragraph, what actually happened? What happened was that this Korban Pesach they did bring, there was a few individuals that were left out. Why were they left out? Because they were Tomei, right? They had come into contact with a dead body. So they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and they said, why should we lose out? Lama Nigara. Moshe Rabbeinu consults with Hashem and he gives them a mitzvah of Pesach Sheni, the second Pesach, the second chance. And we always know that there's a very, very powerful thing that comes out of this parsha. And that is, number one, there's always a second chance. And number two, this power to demand and to want not to be left out of a spiritual experience. Right? It's an amazing idea. These people weren't obligated to bring the Korban Pesach because they were impure. So there could have been two approaches that they take. One approach is, we don't have to, so we don't have to, so then forget it, that's good. Less, more time on our hands. Right? In other words, if you view a mitzvah as an imposition, if you view a mitzvah as a time-consuming, hard load, then when the Torah says you're not obligated to do the mitzvah, so then you're off the hook, so then it's great. But of course, they didn't view the mitzvah that way. They viewed the mitzvah as a mitzvah should be viewed, which is an opportunity. Every mitzvah is another opportunity, another experience of becoming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach, they came screaming. Right? Which we learn from this parasha, this is sort of good jealousy. Like there's bad jealousy and there's good jealousy, right? This is a good jealousy, to want to aspire to be close to Hashem like other people. He has that mitzvah, why can't I have that mitzvah? Right? That's a positive form of jealousy. And they scream, Lama Nigara. And the powerful thing that we see from this parasha is that Hashem responds to that cry. Right? Lama Nigara, Hashem, they say, why should we be left out? And what was the response? You can do it. There's a second way to do it. There's a place of shining. So based on that idea, going back to what Tosfos says, that they actually weren't obligated to bring the Korban Pesach the whole time in the Midbar, and that's why they didn't bring it, that in itself is the embarrassing fact. Why didn't they scream like these guys screamed? They should have learned from the story itself. They should have learned from the first time they brought Korban Pesach. And a few individuals come and they scream, Lama Nigar, why should we be left out? And Hashem responds, because they meant it sincerely. And then all of a sudden, they're not able to bring the Korban Pesach the rest of the time in the Midbar, and they're not screaming. That in itself is the embarrassing thing. So, that's three reasons why it's considered an embarrassing fact they didn't bring the Korban Pesach the whole Midbar. And that explains why the Torah is so out of order over here, why they didn't bring, why the Sefer Bamidbar, should say, doesn't begin with the story of Korban Pesach, because they didn't want to highlight the fact that there were so many years in the Midbar and they weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach. Good, stop there.